this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Art Haywood and his guest. We want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Haywood or his guest at any point this evening, please press *3 on your phone's keypad. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, you, and thank you to all of my neighbors who are participating in tonight's call. Some of the best feedback and ideas I received have come directly from you. I'm Senator Art Haywood, where I am here with my special guest, Dr. Val Arcus, Chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners. We will discuss the opioid crisis and attempt to answer any questions you may have. This format will allow you to listen in, ask a question, just from the comfort of your home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press *3 on your phone. Now, let me introduce my special guest, Dr. Val Arcus, Chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners. Val, welcome to this telephone town hall.
Thanks, Senator Haywood. It's a real honor and privilege to be here with you and all of your constituents. And I'm very pleased to have the chance to talk a little bit about what we're doing in Montgomery County and in this region to combat the opioid overdose epidemic. We've been at this work for several years now. Our county has an overdose task force that has been coordinating a multi-pronged approach to educating the public about all aspects of substance use disorder, helping to increase awareness about dangerous opioids that are available out there, and providing critical resources to those who need treatment. We are making some progress, and I really want people to be hopeful. Substance use disorder is a disease, just like any other disease. High blood pressure, diabetes, these things can be treated, but they have to be treated for the rest of your life. The same thing is true for someone who suffers from an addiction to a drug. During the first half of 2017, when drug-related deaths increased 50% across the 8-county region in southeastern Pennsylvania, in Montgomery County, we actually saw a 4% decrease in deaths over that same time period. So there are steps that are successful, and I look forward to talking with all the listeners tonight and answering their questions about what some of the steps are that they can take to help us combat this disease.
Thank you, Dr. Arcus. Just as a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Haywood or Dr. Arcus this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. And Senator, as we're having folks join us here tonight, there's going to be some time while we get the folks who are calling in screened. Again, if you have a question, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3. Senator, can we talk a little bit about where we're at legislatively here in the Senate, in the General Assembly itself, what the governor's doing? Some of your thoughts about that, and then we'll turn it over to Dr. Arcus to give us her perspective.
Certainly. So the Pennsylvania legislature, along with Governor Wolf, have recognized the opioid crisis. And on the legislative side, what we have done in the last couple of years, I've introduced legislation to limit prescribing of these addictive drugs. This is part of the prevention angle, the prevention approach. And so we have limited prescribing from emergency room visits to 7 days only. And that means a person can get only 7 days worth of certain opioids from the emergency room. This approach has been taken by a number of other states across the nation. New Jersey has a 5-day limit. Some states have a 14-day limit, but it goes to the heart of the problem, which is that prescribing opioids is the source of the addiction and often can lead to heroin. The second thing that we have done, led by Governor Wolf, is start started a drug monitoring program. And the core idea behind the drug monitoring program is we noticed that some individuals were receiving prescription drugs from two or three or four different sources, three or four different prescriptions. Some of them could be overlapping. And what we wanted to do was to equip pharmacists and physicians with the information so that they can limit the multiple overlapping drug prescriptions that some folks were getting to abuse the system. And so the drug monitoring program allows for transparency so that we can reduce that opportunity. Those are two activities that we have going on in the state. Let me mention the last one just for brevity. And the governor has started what he calls centers of excellence. These centers of excellence are around the state, and they are treatment programs. Not only do we need to take action to prevent, but we also need to beef up and provide more treatment. And so these centers of excellence, which are around the entire state, are designed to have high-quality treatment for individuals so that they can begin the recovery process. So we've got the prevention in terms of limiting prescribing and monitoring prescribing, and then on the treatment side, these centers of excellence. Those are some things that the Commonwealth is doing to try to respond.
If you have a question, before I turn to Dr. Arkush for her comments, just to remember, if you have a question for Senator Haywood or Dr. Arkush tonight, talking about opioids, you press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3. Dr. Arkush, do you have some comments to offer?
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on what Senator Haywood said in terms of some of the legislation that they passed, and then explain to people how we work so closely with Senator Haywood to actually put this stuff into practice on the ground. So the we at the county have done quite a bit of outreach to the physicians in our community to educate them about the fact that most people in our region are getting addicted from legally prescribed prescriptions, and asking them to reduce their prescribing, and also making them aware of a number of different guidelines. There are now prescribing guidelines for different physician specialties, and we're making sure the doctors know about them, and we're really strongly encouraging them to use them. We also are asking people to clean out their medicine chests, because you just never know who might get their hands on those unused narcotic medications. Sometimes it's a child or a grandchild or someone who's just visiting for the weekend. Now, we don't want people to throw them down the toilet because that contaminates the water supply. So we have over 50 drug take-back boxes set up around Montgomery County, and there are many in Philadelphia as well, where people can come in, no questions asked. You just drop the drugs into a bin, and they are disposed of properly. So that's a really great way to clean out your medicine cabinet, get this stuff out of your house so that no one else, no one who shouldn't have it can get a hold of it. And then we have also taken another step from a piece of legislation, or actually a regulation that happened at the state, which is the Physician General, Dr. Rachel Levine, signed something called a standing order. That is a prescription that covers the entire state. I signed one myself just for Montgomery County, over which I have jurisdiction, and that makes it very easy for people to walk into a pharmacy and ask for the medication called naloxone. Naloxone is a medicine that can counteract an overdose. It is a way to keep, to really truly save someone's life who is overdosing. So we've made it very easy for people to get that medication, and we also have every police officer in Montgomery County carrying that medication. Those police, just in 2017, saved 367 lives by giving naloxone when they found, came upon or got called to someone who was overdosing.
Thank you very much, Dr. Arkush and Senator Haywood. Before we go to our first caller, just as a reminder, if you have a question this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, first caller we're going to go to tonight is Wilnette in Mount Airy. Wilnette, go ahead. You're live with Dr. Haywood, or excuse me, Senator Haywood.
Yes. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm 75 years old, and I just had a knee replacement. And with opium being so bad, why is that the first thing that the doctors want to give you?
That's question number one.
Excuse me?
That's an excellent question. I'm sorry. It sounds like you had a second question. Go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Okay. My second question is, why did they wait for the drugs to get set that bad to do something about when it hit the Caucasian neighborhood? I'm a black woman. When crack cocaine came into my neighborhood, nobody did anything. Well, no advertising on TV. I don't understand that. All of them is human, regardless of what your race is. So I can't understand the minute they hit the Caucasian neighborhoods, everybody jumped. Everybody wanted to do something. When crack hit the black neighborhood, nobody did anything about it but locked them up. Could somebody answer that question, please?
Yes, I'd be glad to
answer. Tell me why?
Yes,
do the doctors always describe it if it's so bad?
Yes, I'd be glad to answer the second question. Thank you so much for both of your questions. The why prescribing, I think Dr. Arkush may be in a better position to answer that question. But your second question was based on racial impact. And there's no doubt that during the crack epidemic in the 1980s, the approach of the national and the state government was lock them up. And that lock them up approach from the crack and cocaine epidemic led in part to the mass incarceration that we have today. So that is your history is exactly right. That is what happened. And why it happened could be related to, I believe it is, who the victims were. Now, that doesn't mean that today, that is the 12th of March of 2018, that we shouldn't do all that we can today to respond. Well, I think you're right to acknowledge and recognize what did not happen in the past, but today we, in my opinion, have a duty and obligation as fellow human beings to respond to what we see today. And we can be upset about what happened in the past. I'm upset about it as well. But today, we've got to take every avenue that's available to us to respond to those who are in this crisis. As to the question of why the prescribing of opioids had become a common practice in the medical industry, I'm not a physician. Dr. Arkush, do you have a response to that question?
I do, and that's a really important question. So I think it falls into a couple of things. One is that no doctor wants their patient to be in pain, and something like a knee replacement is a pretty painful operation, as I'm sure you know. So it's completely appropriate to prescribe a couple of days' worth of some pain medicine. But where we got into trouble, I think, over time is that doctors started prescribing a month's worth, 30 days' worth of medication, when maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days would have been plenty. And then those medications sometimes were taken way beyond when it was needed to continue to take them, and the addiction sort of snuck up on people, and before they realized it, they were addicted. So that is something where there's been a huge amount of education in the physician community to try to limit that practice. I think the other big problem that we have is that insurance companies will cover the cost of a prescription medication. They frequently will not cover other things that could help treat pain. So they don't always cover enough physical therapy. They frequently don't cover other things like acupuncture or massage or other types of treatments that are very effective at relieving pain. And so sometimes the doctors don't have much other choice than to prescribe pain medication. So that's one of the things that I'm working on right now, is to get our health insurance companies to cover other things besides opioid pain medications.
Wilnette, thank you very much for your call. Again, just as a reminder, I know folks are just joining us. If you have a question for Dr. Arkush tonight or Senator Haywood, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Cecil. Cecil, go ahead.
Yes, my question is this. I heard you say that the emergency rooms will only be providing 7 days' supply of opium, right? My question is this. Will the emergency room be cooperating with one another to provide that information to keep people from skipping around to different emergency rooms getting this medication?
Thank you, Cecil. This is exactly what the drug monitoring program that the governor's office has instituted is designed to achieve, so that the emergency rooms as well as other prescribers are aware of what has been prescribed from other sources. Now, this program is somewhat new, so we still need to get to a point where there's more compliance, more following the program. But the drug monitoring program is exactly targeted for the purpose of preventing what you might call shopping around.
Dr. Arkush, you have anything to add?
Yep, I agree 100%, and it's already had a dramatic impact on what's called doctor shopping in the state. And the really exciting news is that shortly the program will interface with New Jersey, and I know that there's discussion with some of the other neighboring states so that people can't go from one state to the other either.
Cecil, thank you very much for your call. Senator, before we take another call, again, if you have a question, press *3 on your phone's keypad. But I'd like to introduce our live poll question this evening, and that question is, should pharmaceutical companies be expected to fund addiction treatment? If you believe they should, press *1 on your phone's keypad. If you believe they should not, press *2. Again, if you have a question for Senator Haywood or Dr. Arkush tonight, press *3 on your phone's keypad. I'd like to bring Laverne online. Laverne, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Yes. Hi, Senator Haywood.
Hi, Laverne.
Okay, my question is, you guys have Shredder Day, but you don't have – you need a drop box in the 35th district and the 14th district to drop off these old medications. I heard her say that we got 50 places in Montgomery and there's a few places in Philadelphia. I have a lot of medication here, old medications that's been in my house in the bag, and I've been taking it up to Rite Aid and asking him, can he be throwing it out? And he said, no, we can't take them. But I think the easy part, if you had a drop box in the pharmacy, they rob pharmacies, but have it at the police department where they keep an eye on it. And the neighborhood can take their old medication that is close to them and drop those old medications in the box. And then that would keep people from having old medications in their house, from kids or grandkids getting to it. What do you think about that?
That is an excellent idea. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I'm going to a website because the city has a number of drop-off boxes. Yes, they are connected with the police district's office. And I've got...
But we're talking about in within our neighborhoods. People don't want to go all over the city.
That we need more drop-off locations.
That's right.
I agree with you 100% that we do need more drop-off locations, so it's more convenient. So I'm 100% with you. And I believe that that's a conversation I can have with the Jim Kenney and see to what extent the city can create more drop-off locations that are secure. So security is very important, but I'll have that conversation with them. You should know that the city of Philadelphia also has a task force on opioids, and the mayor is aggressively trying to address the challenges, as our Dr. Arkush is doing in Montgomery County. But I will follow up to see how we can get some more locations for drop-off in more neighborhoods. I agree with you 100%. That's part of the solution. And as I said at the outset of this call, we get a lot of good ideas from neighbors. That's one of them. I will follow up. Thank you.
Dr. Arkush, before we get to our next caller, can you describe a little bit about how you developed the network in Montgomery County?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Are you talking specifically about the drop-off boxes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Monco is a little different than Philly in that we actually have 50 municipal police departments. Philly's got one police department, so, you know, I think once this gets up and running, it should be relatively easy to put a drop box at each location. But we had to get 50 police departments on board. So it took a while, I'll be honest, and we had to do a lot of education of our police. But now each police department has at least one. And what's nice about them is that there's no questions asked. You can go in there with any kind of medications. You know, no one checks to see what it is. And the drop boxes are available pretty much 24/7 in most of the places, very secure because there are police around. It's at the police stations. And you just walk in, drop it in the bin, walk back out. So it is really the way to go. And we have gotten, I think last year, I know we had two big drop-off days. Each day we collected 8,000 pounds of drugs. Just on those 2 days, a total of 16,000 plus whatever people dropped off, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So it's a very effective strategy.
Laverne, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Bernard. Bernard, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Yes, Senator Haywood. Now, regular drug dealers on the corners and whatnot selling drugs, they lock them up. So why don't they lock these doctors up, because they know what the drug does to you, and why are they prescribing it when there's so many different alternate medications that would reduce pain? I got hit by a car and lost my leg, and for pain, all I took was aspirin.
Thank you so much for your question. Most of the prescribing is at the discretion of the physicians, and they are not violating any law, any criminal law that we currently have in most instances. Now, there are some instances where they've been called pill mills and physicians have been prosecuted. But in a number of these situations, a physician has discretion as to prescribe 714 or some other length of opioid to reduce pain, and that is, generally speaking, not a crime. And so that is what distinguishes or separates someone who's selling drugs on a corner. That activity is criminal because they're not authorized to prescribe or distribute.
Bernard, thank you very much for your question. Dr. Arkush, do you have anything to add?
I do. So our Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, has been really aggressive in going after doctors who are running these kind of fake pain clinics, which are really just pill mills. You know, people come in, they get a prescription, they often go out and sell them on the street, and they come back, and sometimes the doctor gets a take in it. So happily, our current Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, has been very aggressive in arresting those kinds of doctors and getting them off the street. The other thing that's happening in our region is some of the dealers that have, where they've been able to trace that a dealer sold a particularly bad batch of heroin, oftentimes laced with a drug called fentanyl. Fentanyl is even more deadly than heroin. When they've been able to trace that a particular dealer sold that dose to somebody who took it and overdosed and died, they've been charging that dealer with drug delivery resulting in death, which is a much more serious charge than just dealing drugs. So they have successfully now prosecuted a couple of these folks, and they've been getting like 60 and 80 year sentences. You know, they're effectively getting life sentences for selling heroin that is killing people.
Bernard, thank you very much for your call, and Dr. Arkush, thank you very much. We're going to go back to the callers. And before we do, though, just as a reminder, if you have a question, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad, and I'd like to reintroduce our live poll question, which is, should pharmaceutical companies be expected to fund addiction treatment? If you believe they should, press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not, press 2. Again, if you have a question for Senator Haywood or Dr. Arkush tonight, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Alberta. Alberta, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Alberta. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I have a two-part question. I have a comment and a question. What's the difference in the drug that you were speaking of and Oxycontin? Are they the same drugs?
Are you talking about the naloxone?
No, the pain medication.
Oxycontin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Oxycontin is one of the commonly prescribed pain medicines that you might get from a doctor, but it's taken for, 5, 7, 10 days, it does have the ability to start to cause addiction.
Mm-hmm. Now, because the reason I'm asking, I had knee replacement. I had both knees done at the same time. And there was no way that I could have survived if I didn't have that pain medication. So they're making, a lot of fuss about the medication, but I think people have to learn how to take medication without overdoing it, and they have to monitor their medication when they get it so nobody else would have access to it but them. Because when I had my knee replacement, I had the both done at the same time, there was no way that I could have stood the pain. The pain was unbearable. And I was on the Oxycontin for about 2 weeks, but I never had a problem. So I'm trying to figure out, why. I guess there are some people that's getting the medication and selling it or whatever they're doing. But I feel like if you prescribe a medication, you should be adult and responsible enough to keep it where only you could use it. It shouldn't get into the wrong hands.
So I'm sure we certainly agree that opioids should not be given to people who haven't been prescribed for, and selling it or leaving it around where children or other people can obtain it is certainly an individual responsibility, and certainly the wrong thing to do. I think you're all, as you said, the prescription for some people is completely necessary, and the only way to recover from a surgery or a procedure. A good friend of mine had 2 knee replacements, and the prescriptions that he got were absolutely critical for his recovery. So I hear exactly what you are saying. Now, you had another comment. What was that?
I'm sorry, Senator. We've lost Alberta. My apologies.
No problem. Alberta, thank you so much for calling. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to call back so we can get your second question in. But we are 100% for personal accountability. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have an overprescribing problem. We do.
Dr. Arkush?
So I think... Number one, Alberta is a strong woman. Having both of your knees done at the same time, that is a rough, rough surgery. And we want to make sure here that people who need pain medicine are able to get it. Pain medicine has been one of the greatest breakthroughs in modern medicine ever to help relieve pain. But to Senator Haywood's point, people should only take it for as long as they need it. And that's really the key thing here. There needs to be close monitoring. It makes a lot of sense to me to just give it in much smaller increments and then prescribe more if you need it, rather than just having it be there for the taking. And, of course, then it needs to be gotten rid of if you don't need it all. So I think that's exactly the right message.
I do want to quickly share some of the prescribing guidelines by the Center for Disease Control and National Government. And one of the prescribing guidelines goes to this statement. It says, start low and go slow. start low and go slow. And so this is an approach that says start with a lower dosage and slowly move up in order to address the level of pain that a patient is in. Start low and go slow.
Alberta, thank you very much for your question. Again, if you have a question this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Maren. Maren's from Montgomery County. Maren, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Hi there. Thanks, everyone, for taking my call, and I appreciate the doctor's sentiment on the disease concept of addiction. I myself am in long-term recovery. I was a heroin addict for 13 years. And what I just wanted a brief statement right before I asked the question. So for me, I had to learn a few things about addiction in order to overcome it. One was that every time I relapse, which is a common term for someone that stops doing drugs and then does them again, every time I relapsed, I did it with a sober mind. So for me, what I learned is the mind of someone who suffers from addiction is much different than somebody that does not. So my point would be what happens in treatment centers today? They focus a lot about the physical rehabilitation, which obviously is very important. But what happens is a lot of times, and I can tell you from experience coming out of treatment, my mindset was exactly the same. And even if every opioid was taken off the planet, my mindset was so skewed, I was going to find another substance no matter what it was to change. So for me, I think it's a mindset when it comes to the addict themselves. It's a mindset when it comes to society and the stigma attached to drug addiction. So I guess my question would be, how are we, I mean, the legislation and trying to find a way to fund it, that's all good, and I understand completely. But if treatment fails the addict while they're in there and doesn't help them sufficiently change their mindset before they get out, it almost seems like a giant waste of money. I mean, how can we be assured that treatment is going to change and evolve the way that these drugs have changed and evolved? So I really, again, I appreciate this, and I'm not looking for accolades for being in recovery. This is something that people do all the time, and I just wanted to thank you again for opening these lines of communication.
Thank you so much. Let me briefly make one statement before I turn it over to Dr. Arkush. There are significant efforts trying to destigmatize, take the stigma away from individuals who are addicted. And the most of this is in public relations and conversations. The city of Philadelphia has a big effort to try to destigmatize. And hopefully, in part, by reducing the stigma connected with addiction, individuals will be a little bit more free to take advantage of the treatment and other solutions that are available. Now, the mind-changing proposition that Marion has put on the table hopefully can be influenced by reducing the stigma, because stigma can often be an obstacle to change. So that is part of the solution. I'm sure only one part of it. And I don't know that we would have a full answer to stopping what Marion has called relapse. But Val, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to just thank you so much for your call, and I must congratulate you in your recovery, because that is something that I know you deal with every single day. And I think that's really the point. We are finally starting to make some progress in treatment today, I think partly because everyone is beginning to understand that this is a chronic disease, just like diabetes or high blood pressure. And if anyone who's listening has diabetes or who has a family member with diabetes, they know they're not supposed to go out and get a triple banana split. But you know what? Every once in a while, they do. And it's that same thing. We have to understand that this is a chronic condition. It's going to require lifelong treatment. And we have to treat it like a disease, just like any other chronic disease. The more that we've done that, the more successful the treatment has become. People with this disease are going to have relapses. That is just part of the disease. So we need to be ready for that, we need to have treatment for that, and we need to support people to get through that. The big advance that's been happening lately is that there are now several different medications that can assist somebody in their recovery. And what those medications do is help reduce the cravings to go out and get that access to the opioid again. So the modern treatments now combine medication and therapy. It's called medication-assisted treatment in a really, really good way that has been able to help quite a few people who struggled before. So I'm hopeful that we're starting to move in the right direction. We're getting away from all the stigma. The stigma is still there, and it's really difficult. But this is not a moral failing or bad parenting or anything else. This is a disease, and the sooner that we understand that fully and treat it just like we treat every other disease, the more successful we're going to be in that treatment.
Thank you very much for your call. We have some folks that want to talk. We're going to go back to the callers right now. We're going to go to Barbara. Barbara, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood and Dr. Arkush.
My call is for Dr. Arkush. Doctor, I'm just wondering if you could just give us a list of things that we can do naturally to help manage pain. Because, at 55, I'm getting older and older, and I do see a change in my body, and I think eventually I'm going to have to do something with my knees. But I just want to know if there are anything just natural. I'm just afraid of taking any kind of pain pills at all. And I think it's a lot of people like me who may need some kind of something for the pain, but are just afraid of the addictive nature of an opioid drugs.
Yep, that's a really, really good question. So there are many things that you can do, including things like exercise, gentle exercise. Yoga in particular is incredibly effective for pain. And stretching and those types of yoga, even if you have a joint that's a little inflamed or starting to go, usually actually makes it feel much better and doesn't cause any harm. It's always good if you have a very specific problem, like your knee is really bothering you, to check in with your doctor and get a diagnosis and figure out, is there really something going on with the knee joint itself, or do I just have some muscle weakness? And maybe if I firmed up those muscles, got a little bit stronger, the pain would go away. So it's good to have some input from your doctor. You'll be amazed at how much just Tylenol or ibuprofen, which is Advil or Motrin, can help pain. Opioids should be the absolute last thing on the list and are rarely needed to manage pain. With, stretching, yoga, sometimes actually some gentle weightlifting, things like that can strengthen the muscles around a joint, those are all things that can help the pain without anything going anywhere near taking an opioid pain medication.
Barbara, thank you very much for your call. If you have a question this evening, you press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to Maria. Maria, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood and Dr. Arkush.
Yes, hi, Senator Haywood and Dr. Arkush. I wanted to know, how do you plan to ensure that people are aware of their ability to drop off medications? Because I know that there are many people who aren't aware, and therefore this problem is really, prevalent.
Let me understand that question. I hear you saying that individuals don't see their power, don't realize that they can break from the prescription that has been provided by their physician and don't see they have the power or freedom to do so. Val, I'm not really familiar with this challenge. Have you seen this as well?
Well, I think, were you asking, how to publicize where you can get rid of your medications and things like that? Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
Got it. Well, that's a great question. So in Montgomery County, and Senator Haywood has the wonderful challenge of representing people in two different counties, so the answers may be slightly different. But in Montgomery County, we have a website, and that website is montcopa.org/overdose prevention, all one word. So montcopa.org/overdose prevention. And from that page, you can get links to where all the drug take back boxes are located and a whole bunch of other resources at your disposal.
On the Philadelphia County side, the police districts are where individuals can drop off the prescription drugs. In Northwest Philly, that'd be the 14th district or the 35th district police offices are where these prescription drugs can be dropped off. But I've indicated to a caller earlier, I will try to have a conversation with the city officials in Philadelphia to see if some additional locations can be provided, and I will follow up on that. But the 14th and 35th districts are currently where prescription drugs can be dropped off.
And, you know, if everybody listening on this call helps publicize this, you are our army, and Senator Haywood and I can't do this by ourselves. And so you all have the power to share this information with all your friends and your family and social media. If you can help publicize these things, that will go a long way.
Thank you. Thank you, Maria, for the call. It's a good call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Hazel. Hazel, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Hi. To both of you, Senator and Doctor, what about people like myself who do take an opioid drug, and I am at the wit's end because it is kind of my last resort. Due to many spinal issues, I'm just in a lot of pain, okay? And this is post-surgery. And so with this opioid thing, I just recently had to sign a statement. If I lose the prescription, which I did, but I did find it, or I'm only allowed a supply, the bottle says, take one pill every 4 hours as needed for pain. Mm-hmm. But I'm only, based on that message, I'm only given enough. I'm only given 60 pills for a month. So if I have days that I need to use those directions, I'm short. And then I end up having to suffer. And Dr. Arkush, as you know, people with pain, when that gets out of control, it's hard to get back in control. And that's what some people struggle with. So with doctors prescribing this, wouldn't this be more on an individual basis rather than just put out that blanket that no one can have any more than what we say, 7 days in emergency or whatever else the other option is, or a 30-day supply, whatever that is. I don't get a 30-day supply. Two pills a day, that's it. I'm done.
Thank you so much for that question. And I do believe that the discretion by the physicians is important. The 7-day limit is for emergency room care only. And so an individual who leaves the emergency room and then goes to their normal physician could get a prescription based upon that visit of that they've had with their primary care physician. So the 7 days is to limit the impact of the emergency room visit. It does not apply beyond the emergency room visit. As to the question of what do you do when you are in pain and your prescription runs out, Dr. Arkush, I don't know what you think, Val.
Well, I think that we have to remember in this whole conversation that there are a group of people who have chronic pain, and that is a group that is very different than the group that we have been seeing that have
become, who have developed a substance use disorder and, you know, and unfortunately in some cases succumb to that. So there's a different group of people that do have chronic pain that are very well managed with lower doses of opioids that enables them to go about their business and you know, have a pretty full life. So that's where we have to be careful that this pendulum doesn't swing too far in the other direction, that we deprive people who really need those that kind of chronic pain management from receiving that. So, you know, hopefully you're seeing somebody who's an expert in chronic pain management. And there are newer treatments in some cases that you could ask about. It might be possible to very slowly over time wean off of the opioids and start up with something different that's not an opioid. But those are complicated decisions and something that you really need to talk to a pain specialist about.
Hazel, thank you very much for your call. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Lily. Lily, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the education of doctors and psychiatrists and therapists who work with families who have a child or a young adult who is addicted to drugs, and the parent is struggling because, or the aunt or uncle is struggling because they see this young person whose personality is changing, and they try to get support. And in my particular case, I sought support from a number of psychiatrists, even had this young person go see psychiatrists and see doctors, and not one of them could diagnose that the person was addicted to drugs. And when somebody's addicted to drugs, they're not going to admit it. So the only way that you can do it is to understand what the symptoms are and to try to get into some kind of a, you know, a dialogue where maybe you can help the person to get into treatment. So the question is there anything being done to better educate doctors and therapists and psychiatrists that when they see somebody, they don't automatically say that they're schizophrenic or bipolar or something else, that they can recognize the signs of addiction?
I am not familiar with the actual education of physicians. It's very clear to me, however, that the Center for Disease Control is providing a tremendous amount of information nationally to physicians and psychiatrists outlining the likely symptoms for addiction, how that is being conveyed to doctors in the communities. I'm not sure, beyond seeing a significant online effort to share what's known. Val, what do you say about that one?
So depending on the specialty of the physician, they may or may not have had a lot of education in this particular area. And as Senator Haywood noted, there is a lot of education being given to physicians now and made available to physicians so that they can become better acquainted with the signs and symptoms of a substance use disorder if that was not something that they learned during their training. There are also programs in all of the schools. Every school district in Pennsylvania has something called the Student Assistance Program, and that is something that you can talk to a particular school about and ask that a child be referred to the Student Assistance Program in that school. And there should be a relationship between the school district and an organization that provides treatment for drug and alcohol problems or concerns with each school district. In the Montgomery County part of Senator Haywood's district, that's for the most part Aldersgate Youth Services Bureau. There should be something similar in the Philadelphia part of the district, and that would be something you could do at the school level if it's a student.
I also do want to share that in Philadelphia County, there is a toll-free number from the City of Philadelphia for individuals who are struggling or have a friend or a family member struggling with addiction, and that toll-free number is 888-545-2600, 888-545-2600. For those with a friend or a family member, or even if it's you struggling with addiction, help is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Lily, thank you very much for that question. We're going to go back to the callers now. We're going to go to Anita. Anita, go ahead. You're live with Senator Haywood.
Hello. I'm curious because I'm noticing in today's Metro that there's an advertisement about Narcan or Naloxone. It says saving a life can be this easy, and it actually shows a graphic of someone administering Narcan to someone, laying down or in a reclined position. It says prevent opioid overdose, and it says carry Narcan. Are we actually starting a program now where the public would be requested to carry the overdose antidote?
Thank you for that question, and the answer to that is no.
Okay.
We do not have a statewide program for the general public to carry or administer naloxone. That is something that is, it is a program targeted toward police and first responders to have the naloxone to administer. There is some training that's required, and
okay. So
it's not available to the general public, but it has had a significant impact. I'm looking at a report from Philadelphia County, and it looks like in 2017, over 5,000 individuals had their lives saved by the administration of naloxone. I'm sure there's a high number in Montgomery County and across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So it is working. It is saving lives. But the administration of it has to be by individuals with the suitable training.
Okay.
Actually, so there's a little addendum to that. There is, for anyone who is concerned about a family member or a friend or relative or themselves, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, there's now something across the state of Pennsylvania called a standing order, where you can walk into a pharmacy, and most pharmacies honor it, and you can ask for a prescription of the nasal spray naloxone without having to get a prescription from your own doctor, and they will give that to you. And it's very easy to give. The nasal spray literally just gets sprayed into the nose. And we're actually encouraging anyone who's concerned about a family member or a friend or themselves to get it and to carry it. There's also a movement for some physicians who, when they prescribe an opioid pain medicine for a patient who is at risk from the opioids for other medical reasons. Sometimes people that have severe breathing problems or other issues are at risk. They're just going ahead and prescribing this Narcan at the same time. So they pick, you know, they have it there just in case. So it's a very, very safe drug to give. If you give it to someone who's not overdosing, it won't hurt them. And so we're actually urging people who have any concerns at all about anyone they know to have it. Because once someone stops breathing, and that's what you die from with an opioid overdose, you only have about 6 to 8 minutes before permanent brain damage can start. So the quicker that someone gets that Narcan and starts breathing again, the better their chances are of survival.
So thank you very much, Val, for that correction. One of the key reasons I like to have experts on my telephone town halls, and thank you for clearing that up. Because the information I had was not completely accurate, and I'm so glad you're on the phone so we can make sure residents have accurate information. Thank you so much.
Anita, thank you very much for your call. Senator, I'm going to go over the results of the live poll question tonight, and the poll question was, should pharmaceutical companies be expected to fund addiction treatment. The yes came in at 78%. 22% believe we're no's. Senator, we're going to just come down the home stretch here. I know that there are some concluding comments that both you and Dr. Arkush would like to make. So, Senator, if you'd like to begin.
I just want to thank Dr. Arkush again for joining our show, providing clarifying and accurate information to individuals throughout both counties. Also, most importantly, thank all of the callers. It's your participation that allows us to provide information so we can get it out to the community. I would like to say that if you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171, or you can also visit my website at www.senatorhaywood.com. Dr. Arkush, please share some final comments. And again, thank you so much for joining the call tonight.
Well, I want to thank you, Senator Haywood, for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I just want to thank everyone who listened in tonight and called in to ask questions. If everyone who's listening can help share all of this information with your friends and your family, you'll go a long way to helping us fight the stigma around this chronic disease. And again, for folks that are on the Montgomery County side, you can go to montcopa.org/overdose prevention and read about a lot of the things that we talked about tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Arkush. Thank you, Senator Haywood. It's been an excellent evening, an excellent discussion. I'd like to thank all those who have joined us here this evening for participating in Senator Art Haywood's telephone town hall. You have been a great audience, and thank you for sharing the evening with us.